Okay, so we are going to begin the new perek, Kof Lamed Omid Beis, 19th perek of Shabbos. The subject of this perek is Bris Milah. So we learned at the end of the previous perek that we said, Kol Tzorche Milah Oisim B'Shabbos, you can do on Shabbos all the necessities of Milah. So now we're going to talk about in this perek about what we're going to start talking about what those necessities are, what you're allowed and aren't allowed to do on Shabbos. And we're going to end up talking about Bechlal. This parak talks about the dinim of Mila in general. So pretty much everything we know about the halachas of Bris Mila, almost all of it comes from this parak. Somebody's got a lot of background noise, if you don't mind muting yourself. Or I'll mute you as the case may be. Okay, thank you. Okay, so the Mishnah begins. Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Im loy hevi kli me'erev Shabbos. If you didn't bring the keli, meaning the knife, to do the bris milah before Shabbos, you didn't bring it to where the baby is, mevi'er b'Shabbos, then you can bring it on Shabbos, and you should do it nugula, you should bring it uncovered. Why you should bring it uncovered, we'll see in the Gemara. Over sekona, and then because we're gonna see, Rabbi Eliezer holds that not only the milah itself is doicha Shabbos when it's bismana, when it's on the eighth day, that everybody agrees to. Here we're talking about what's called machshire mila, the prerequisites for mila. In this case, where you don't have a knife and you need a knife, Rabbi Eliezer holds that those prerequisites are also doicha Shabbos. In general, Rabbi Eliezer holds that any mitzvah that itself is doicha Shabbos, so do the machshirim of that mitzvah. He says the same thing in Pesachim, for example, as far as the Korban Pesach. We know you bring the Korban Pesach on when Erev Pesach falls on Erev Shabbos, as it's going to do this coming year. But Rabbi Eliezer says you can also do the prerequisites for it. For example, the same thing. Let's say to actually carry a shechita knife, or to be able to do other kinds of things that have to be done before the Korban Pesach is brought. He says you can do them on Shabbos as well. Actually, the example it gives in the Mishnah over there is he would say if there's a person who is tamei, you're allowed to sprinkle them with parah adruma water, even though usually that would be also drabanan, because since it's necessary for him to bring the Korban Pesach, then the chum allowed it. As we're going to see in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva disagrees with that. Anyway, so Rabbi Eliezer is saying you are allowed to bring the knife over sakana, and then if it's a time of danger, for example, the goyim have banned bris milah, as we know at various times in history they did, mechasehu, then you should cover it, but al pi edim, then what you should do is you cover it with edim, meaning that you have edim there to say that what he's carrying under the cover is a milah knife, rather than, so this way people don't suspect him of just carrying something in Rishos Rabim Stam. Whether it means that the Edom have to actually walk along with him, or whether it just means that the Edom are there when he covers it, Rav Moshe talks about that in a couple of different places in his Trovas. Okay. Tosfos actually, by the way, brings up an interesting point. Why are we saying bring the knife to the baby? Why don't we bring the baby to the knife? We've learned before about the concept called chai noseh satzmai, that a living creature, we said both the Chachamim and Rav Nosson agree that a person is noseh satzmai, and they carry themselves, and therefore that carrying them on Shabbos is not an issur d'oraisa, whereas carrying the knife obviously would be an issur d'oraisa. So why don't we do that? So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. One of them is that, look, and after the bris, you're going to have to bring him back to his mother, right? And at that point, the baby is considered a chayla. He's considered a chayla because he just had a bris milah. So then in any case, you'd be over on Shabbos carrying him. So in that case, you might as well bring the knife. Other Rishonim say somewhat differently that anyway, actually Tosfos themselves seems to say earlier a little differently that little kids anyway, the concept of Chai Noseh Satzmai doesn't apply to. The whole concept of Chai Noseh Satzmai is the person helps make themselves easier, helps carry some of their weight. A baby doesn't do that, especially not an eight-day-old baby. They just the opposite. They may stiffen themselves, or they may whatever. It may not be, they're not doing anything to help carry themselves. They're not distributing their weight. Anyway, then Tosfos says another answer. Never mind all of that. The fact is, it'll be faster if you get the knife to the baby than it is to get the baby to the knife, and therefore we want to do that. We want to do the mitzvah in the fastest possible way. According to Rabbi Eliezer, that means again even the prerequisites itself. So for example, carrying the knife. So therefore, we should try to. We could do it slower by bringing the baby and not be over on an issur d'oraisa, but nevertheless, we don't want to do that. We want to show how precious the mitzvah is that we're going to do it. That we're going to be able to do it as fast as possible.
Another thing, if it's bad weather, if it's raining, if it's cold, All
well,
that
maybe
would
that
make it
also.
more difficult. Could make
That
it more
may
difficult.
also be. That may also be, but that, yeah. But in any case, yeah. So those are the various answers why you bring the knife. Bechlal, by the way, also Mefoshim talk about in the previous perek we talked about the situation as far as being mechalal Shabbos for a woman who gave birth, and we did say over there that there you have to do certain things with shinuyim. We said even for example what we talked about, let's say for example bring oil to her. We said. Ideally, you bring oil in your hand where it's not a where it's not an Issa Daraisa, because that's not a normal way of carrying. If not, then the woman brings it in her hair, and if not, then you carry it straight. Over here, we don't say that, and one reason is because when it comes to a sick person, when we say we break Shabbos to save a sick person, it's not so much that Shabbos is hutra, it's that it's dechoya, it's that we push aside Shabbos for the sake of pikuach nefesh, as opposed to over here, Shabbos is hutra. You have a heter to do the bris milah, and therefore Rabbi Eliezer says that also applies to the machshirei milah, to the prerequisites. Okay, continues the mission of Oid Omer Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer said another thing also in this connection about the prerequisites for milah, about being able to do things that even things that could have been done before Shabbos. That's the point. Rabbi Eliezer holds that even things that could have equally well been done before Shabbos, nevertheless you're allowed to do them on Shabbos itself. So Rabbi Eliezer says, what if you don't have a milah knife? Kursim etzim, you're allowed to chop down wood, lasis pechamin, to make charcoal, lasis klibarzo, which then you're going to use that in order to make an iron knife that you're going to use for the bris milah. By the way, I mean, in theory, you know, Mefoshim point out, in theory, you could have used something else. Why go through all those different malachas? Just chop down the wood and use a piece of wood for bris milah. There is an idea that the ideal way to do bris milah is with a metal knife, with an iron or steel or whatever knife. There's a medrash on it that says that when David was about to kill Goliath by slinging at him with a stone, Goliath, it says in the pasuk, was completely protected by armor, by metal armor. So how does a stone get through that? So one thing is the Medrash says that the stone tells the armor, let me through. I have a mitzvah to fulfill to kill this Rasha Goliath. And the reward that the iron got for letting the iron go through is that bris milah is done with iron. We find in the psukim over there, David calls Goliath and Bechal, the psukim always call the plishtim, ha'oril hazeh, ha'arelam hazeh, because the plishtim, like most goyim in that time, didn't do bris milah, whereas we Jewish people do. So therefore, like the reward of iron is that it's used to show the difference between a yid and a goy when it comes to bris milah. Anyway, so Rabbi Eliezer is saying that you can do that. You can even make an iron knife on Shabbos if necessary. There word kli over here, you notice, is in parenthesis, because there are gersos, that there are rishonim who say maybe you shouldn't say the word kli. I mean, after all, you don't have to make a keli. You can just make a sharp piece of iron, but whatever. So Rabbi Eliezer says you can even go to that extent. Okay, the Mishnah continues. Klal Amar Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said a general rule, disagreeing with Rabbi Eliezer. No, kol malacha she'efshar la'asosim erev Shabbos. Any malacha that could have been done on erev Shabbos, namely, for example, making a knife or bringing a knife or whatever, ain't a doicha as a Shabbos. Such things are not doicha Shabbos. Umila she'efshar la'asosim erev Shabbos. The mila itself, which can't have been done before Shabbos, doicha as a Shabbos. That is doicha Shabbos. So the mila itself, and then various things after the mila as well. In Erevin, Be'ez Hashem, we're going to learn, for example, about a situation. We're going to learn in Erevin in more detail about a situation. You have to bathe the baby with hot water after the milah, so then you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. And even if, let's say, you have a situation where the hot water spills and you're allowed to boil up new water, but the other things, making the knife or bringing the knife or other such things that could have been done before Shabbos, Rabbi Akiva says, if you didn't do them before Shabbos, then you can't do them on Shabbos. Then you would have to just delay the bris. You have a machlokes haposkim whether in that case, for example, you'd be allowed to tell a goy to bring the knife. Okay. The Gemara starts off. Iboilo. Time of the Rabbi Eliezer, Mishum Chibuve Mitzvah, is the reason why Rabbi Eliezer is saying that you should bring the knife uncovered, is it because of Chibuv Mitzvah, to show how precious the Mitzvah is, to show that, look at this, as important as Shabbos is, Bris Milah, Bismana is more important than that, and we're Doicha Shabbos for it, and therefore we're going to carry the knife uncovered to show that. Maybe the reason is just because of chashad, so people don't suspect him that he's carrying something else. When they see him carrying a knife, they'll understand that he's carrying it for a milah, as opposed to if he covers it up, people might think that he's carrying something else. Moses Lamai Nafkamina, what's the practical difference between those reasons? The difference is Lasui Mechusal Pi Edim. Would you be allowed to bring it in times when it's not dangerous? Now, we said in the Mishnah, when it's dangerous, then you do cover it up and you have Edim, but what about when it's not dangerous? Would you be allowed to do that? If you say the reason why you should bring it uncovered is because of chibuv mitzvah, to show how precious the mitzvah is, then megula ein mechusalai, then you can only do it covered. Then you dafka should do it uncovered. You shouldn't, under normal circumstances, be bringing it covered. But if you say, and the reason is because people are going to suspect that he's carrying it when he's not supposed to on Shabbos, then afil mechusa shaper dami, then it would be fine for him to cover it as long as he has edim. So what is it? So Gemara says, Itma, Amar Rabbi Levi, like Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Ela l'chibuv mitzvah. Yes, in fact, Rabbi Eliezer only said his din because of chibuv mitzvah. Tanya Nami Hachi, we learned similarly in the Braisa, Mevi'a Megulav Ein Mevi'a Mechosa. You bring it uncovered, you don't bring it covered, Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says specifically, you dafka should not bring it uncovered. Now, if it was a matter of chashad, again, there would be no problem bringing it covered as long as you had edim. But the fact that he's saying you dafka bring it uncovered shows, therefore, that it's because of chibuv mitzvah, because he wants you to show how precious the mitzvah is, that it overrides Shabbos. So in other words, Rashi says obviously in the sefer, when we're saying that you need edim, there's no question that there it's because of chashad, because there obviously you have to bring it covered because of the gzeiras hamalchus. So therefore, you need edim in order to avoid chashad. But the question is in the resha, when we're saying that you bring it uncovered. So we're saying now that it means you should dafka bring it uncovered in order to demonstrate chibuv mitzvah. Omer Ravashi, masnisin nami deka. So Ravashi says, never mind, you have a braisa that tells you that. You can actually see that from the wording of the Mishnah itself. Bikatani, uvashasa sakonim chaseu api edim. We said when it's dangerous, then you should bring it covered with edim watching that you covered it, or maybe going along with you as you're carrying it, implying the sakona ein shaloi b'sakona loy, implying you only should do that when it's a time of danger. So you have no choice. You can't carry the knife uncovered. Therefore, the second best thing to do is to bring it with edim. Implying, but if it's not a time of danger, you shouldn't be doing that. You should dafka be bringing it uncovered. That shows, that demonstrates that Rabbi Eliezer is saying his reason because of chibuv mitzvah. Good. Shmamina, that proves it. Okay. Next, Tanya Edoch, we learn in another braisa. Again, this braisa says that you bring the mila knife uncovered, not covered, because again, you want to demonstrate chibuv mitzvah. You want to show the preciousness of the mitzvah of mila, that it overrides Shabbos. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, that's what Rabbi Eliezer says, as we just said. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer. Now, Rabbi Yehuda tells us in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, you should know Noyagin Hoyu B'Shasa Sakana. So this that we said in the Mishnah is also part of what Rabbi Eliezer is saying, that they had a minhag in a time of sakana, that in a time when there was danger from the government, shahim avin mechusal pi edim, that they would bring the knife covered with edim. So fine. So this that the Mishnah had said with sakana machaseu pi edim, you should know is also part of what Rabbi Eliezer is saying, and the Braisa is telling us Rabbi Yehuda is reporting that in Rabbi Eliezer's name. Okay. Pingma says he boilu. So now we have a question. When we say edim dekamer, we're saying that you bring it with edim in the plural. Does that mean ihu v'chad? Does it mean you need the person himself who's carrying the knife plus one other person, and those two people make two edim? Aduma hu utrei. Or maybe what you need is you need him who's carrying the knife plus two more people to be made on him. So which is it? Well, let's look again. The Mishnah and the Braisa said that in the time of danger, you cover it based on edim. So now edim is plural. Yamet b'shleimahu today. If you say it means he and two other people, shaper, then we understand it's called edim. You can't, because in other words, the point is, if it was only one other person, eli yamet hu v'chad. If you said it was only him and one other person, my edim. Why would you call them edim in the plural? He himself can't be an aid on himself. A person can't say aidrus on himself. So if we're saying you need edim, evidently, that demonstrates that you need two aid him besides for him. Otherwise, he himself is not an aid. The answer is not necessarily. What it could mean is shru'uyim lahoyed b'makam acher. It could mean just that you need two people. And it means, in other words, it's two people in the sense that if there was a different situation, the two of them together could serve for aid him. Because after all, Rashi says, I mean, we're not talking about, there's no dini mominus, there's no dini nefashis involved. All it is gilim mil sabalma. All it is just to take away chashad. So therefore, it's enough to have he himself can count as one of the two edim. And then you have, and the point is, in other words, he himself is a person who would be kosher to give edus in a different context together with this other person. And therefore, that's good enough, which actually the Tosfos Yom Tov says. That implies, in other words, the person himself who's bringing the knife has to be somebody who would be kosher to give edus. So he can't be a ganav or one of those other people who's psula edus. And it would also have to be that he and the other person are not relatives, because two relatives together can't give edus. But once you have that, once you have two people who each of them individually would be a kosher aid, and together their edus would be kosher for other things, then good, they can be giving edus for this, even maybe. So we don't have a proof one way or the other. La halacha, it's not applicable anyway, because the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer. The halacha is like Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, that the machshirei milah are not doicha Shabbos. So if you didn't have a knife, you anyway can't bring it on Shabbos. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, v'oid omer Rabbi Eliezer, we said furthermore, Rabbi Eliezer said that even if you don't have a knife, you're allowed to make a knife on Shabbos. As he said, you're allowed to chop down wood and use it to make charcoal and use it to make a knife. In Rabbi Eliezer's town, Rabbi Eliezer lived in the city of Lud. In Rabbi Eliezer's city, they actually did that. They would actually do that on Shabbos. If they didn't have a knife, they would chop down. They would chop down trees and make charcoal, etc. In fact, there's a Tosfos, and the Gemara brings this in Yuvamis as well, because you have a sugya in Yuvamis on the question: when you have a machlokas like this, are you allowed to follow? Are you allowed to follow one opinion, even if it's a minority opinion? So over here, you have Rabbi Eliezer against Rabbi Akiva, and it's not just Rabbi Akiva. The other Chachamim agree with Rabbi Akiva as well. So are you allowed to follow Rabbi Eliezer? So we're saying that in the city where the person himself was the Rav, then yes, you're allowed to, as long as the halacha has not officially been established one way or the other, and in that time it hadn't yet. It was known already Rabbi Eliezer is a das yachid, and as the Gemara is going to point out later on, Rabbi Eliezer is shamusi, which means either that the chachamim had to put him in nidui, or that he was from Beis Shammai. So all of that was known. Nevertheless, the chachamim hadn't actually sat down and voted and said the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer. So at this point, therefore, the halacha could conceivably the halacha could still have been established like Rabbi Eliezer, because it hadn't been established yet one way or the other. Therefore, the people of his city were entitled to follow his psak. So we're not able to say. So now, once the halacha is decided that not, then you can't just say, I'm going to follow Rabbi Eliezer. And also, even if not, even before that, you can't just say in a random city, well, we feel like following Rabbi Eliezer, but in Rabbi Eliezer's city, you would be allowed to do that. So that's what they did. They would actually make knives on Shabbos for Mila. And in fact, there's a Tosfos in that sugya and Yuvamis that says they would actually put themselves in that situation in the first place. They would work out a situation, if they knew there was going to be a bris on Shabbos, where they don't have a knife available, where they have to then go chop down wood and make charcoal, etc. Again, in order to show chibuv mitzvah, in order to show the preciousness of the mitzvah, that look how much we override Shabbos for the sake of bris milah. So they did that. Another example, in Rabbi Yosi Aglili's city, someplace in the Galil, obviously, they would eat bird meat, chicken or other kinds of bird, with milk. Now you have a machloikas in Cholin. You have Rabbi Akiva over there says that bird meat in milk is only also dirabanan. Tosfos learns over there that the Chachamim disagree with him and say it's actually daraisa. And Rabbi Yosi Aglili says that it's completely mutter even dirabanan. So in Rabbi Yosi Aglili's city, they would actually do that. In practice, they would actually eat chicken or other kinds of bird meat with milk. Again, because the halacha had not yet been decided against him at that point, and since it was the place where he himself had been the Rav, then they were entitled to follow his opinion. So the Gemara tells an example, Levi Ikla Lebe Yosef Rishba, Levi, the Tana slash Amore, he's kind of like in the transitional generation, Ikla Lebe Yosef Rishba, he visited the house of Yosef Rishba. Rishba, Rashi translates over here, means a bird trapper. So that was this Yosef did that, trap birds for a living. In other places, Rashi gives an explanation, or Tosfos gives an explanation, that Rishba means resh base of. It's short for the words resh base of, which means the head of his household. Anyway, whatever it is, so Levi visited this person. Krivale resha de tavsa b'chelba. They brought him to eat a head of a tavas, which is a kind of bird, In modern Hebrew, tavus means a peacock. I don't know whether that's what it means in the Gemara over here. Anyway, they brought him that, cooked in milk. Lo yochal, he didn't eat it, because you're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to eat bird meat and milk. Ki also kameh de Rebbe, when Levi came back to Rebbe, amalei amai lo tishamsinu. So Rebbe says, very nice, you didn't eat it. Well, these people are doing an issu. Why don't you put them in cheirem for being over at least on an issu d'rabbanan? So Levi says, Asri de Rabbi Huda ben Meseira Hava, because this was in the city where Rabbi Huda ben Meseira had been the Rav a couple of generations earlier. This is in the city of Nitzivin in the north of Babel. V'amina, so I thought this that they're eating, brood meat and milk, maybe Dilma Darsh Lahu Rabbi Yisrael Glili. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda ben Veseira in his times had darshened them like Rabbi Yisrael Glili, that you're allowed to do that, and therefore I can't put them in Chayrim for following the psak of their local Rav. So I don't know if Rabbi Yehuda ben Veseira passed in that way for them, but I can't assume that he didn't, and therefore put him in Chayrim. So I myself, I'm not going to eat it, but I can't do that. What do we see? What does Rabbi Yehuda Glili say? The Tan. We learn in a Mishnah in Cholin. Rabbi Yehuda Glili Omer, why is it that bird milk is not osur? And he says, Nemer lo seichlu kol nevela. Now, like this, you have a pasuk that says you're not allowed to eat any nevela. But Nemer lo sevashol gdi b'chalev imoy. You also have a pasuk that says that you're not allowed to cook a baby animal. Gdi Rashi explains on the pasuk means the young of any kind of animal. B'chalev imoy, in its mother's milk. So you would think, so like this, Escha also b'shum nevela. So the rule is, any kind of creature where if it dies without shchita, you're not allowed to eat it. Also levash b'chalav, you're not allowed to cook it in milk. So that tells us right away, for example, that fish or locusts, which you don't need to shecht, you're allowed to eat them just when they die on their own, then those are not subject to the issur of basam chalav. So then the question is, oif sha'osa mishum nevela, in that case, a bird is also as nevela, yachol yehe osa levash mechalav, so you would think maybe you're not allowed to cook it in milk either. No, it says Rabbi Yisrael, the Talmud Lomar. No, therefore the pasuk says, b'chalev imoy, you're not allowed to cook it in its mother's milk, implying yotza oif she'en lechalev ein. So birds don't have mother's milk, because the mother, only mammals feed their young with milk, birds don't. So therefore, the words b'chalev imoy, Rabbi Yisrael Glili says, come to teach us that birds are excluded. And he also holds there's no isur d'rabbanan on it, unlike Rabbi Akiva, who says, fine, I agree, it's not also d'araisa, but at least the chachamim asur it d'rabbanan, because you might confuse it with animal meat. Rabbi Yisrael Glili doesn't hold of that gzera. So therefore, according to him, you're allowed to eat it. Okay. Again, obviously the halacha is not like Rabbi Yisrael Glili, but if you were in a place where, in those times before the halacha had been decided, if you were in the city where Rabbi Yisrael Glili was the rav, or where the local rav, such as Rabbi Yehuda ben Meseira, had paskin like him, then you would be allowed to. Nowadays, of course, that doesn't apply to these things, but you have other similar things. For example, an example, let's say, would be this, that we don't sleep in the sukkah on Sukkos is, our rabbeim have told us not to do it. So therefore, that's it. You know, when we're, you know, we follow that psak, therefore. So even if we're pashtus, even if we're staying in a community where they don't. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Ir Achas Haisa Be'eretz Yisrael, Shoy Oisin K'Rabbi Eliezer. There was a certain city in Eretz Yisrael where they used to follow Rabbi Eliezer, but Pashtos, like we're saying before, was the city where Rabbi Eliezer himself had been the Rav. So they used to actually follow Rabbi Eliezer's opinion and bring the knife on Shabbos if they didn't have it before Shabbos, or even make a knife on Shabbos if they didn't have a knife available at all before Shabbos. And the reward for it was v'hayom mason bizmanon, they would die in their proper time, meaning nobody died young in that city. It was that was their reward. Again, as long as the halacha had not been pasked against Rabbi Eliezer, then they were entitled to follow his opinion, and they did that in order to show how precious the mitzvah of mila is to them. And their reward, therefore, the reward for the fact that they did mila bizmana, rather than postponing it till after Shabbos because they didn't have a knife, is that they died bizmana and they didn't die young. Marsha says you have an interesting remez to this, that bris mila bizmana helps with arichos yomim, because you have contrast Avraham and Yitzchak. Yitzchak had his bris at the right time on the eighth day. He was the first one to do that, and he lived the longest of all the others. Avraham had his bris later at 99, and he lived 5 years shorter. So you see that there's a certain association, Marshall says, between bris mila bismana and living long, or living out, a person living out his full, I shouldn't say living long, actually. Sometimes you have, min hashamayim, it may have been decided in the first place when the person was born that he gets X number of years. But in other words, at least they, you know, he dies at that time rather than dying younger of some disease or something. Veloy oid, and not only that, in that city, El Shapam Achas Gazra Malchus Rasha Gzera Yisrael Alamila, one time the wicked government, which in the Gemara usually means that means the Romans, one time they made a Gzera on Mila, Baal Oisa Ir like Gazra, but they didn't make the Gzera on that city. So that was also part of their reward, that they were so careful in the mitzvah of Mila to the extent that they followed the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer to be Doicha Shabbos for it, that their reward was also that. Therefore, when the Romans made a gzera on that mitzvah, that it didn't affect them. Okay. So now let's talk a little agada about bris mila. Tanya, Reb Shimon Gamliel, kol mitzvah shekiblu aleim b'simcha, any mitzvah that the Jewish people to begin with accepted b'simcha, kigoin mila, for example, the mitzvah of mila, and we know that mila is associated with happiness. Tichtiv sos anochi al matzech al imasecha kemoitze shalom. The pasuk says, David HaMelech says, I rejoice about your word, about your saying, more than a person who finds a great treasure. Now, what does that have to do with bris mila? Rashi explains that it means like this. First of all, it means the word imrasecha is lashon yachid, so it means the one amira, the one saying that came before all the others. That was the first mitzvah that was given. That was the first mitzvah that was given to Avraham Avinu, and then later on to us Jewish people. So that is that's the mila, and the reason why we're so happy with it, Rashi says, is because it stays with us constantly. Rashi brings the famous story about David HaMelech, that one time when he was in the bathhouse, he was very upset because he didn't have any of his regular mitzvahs with him. He didn't have tzitzis, he didn't have tefillin, he didn't have nothing. Then he realized he still has his bris mila with him, and he was happy about that. So therefore, we're extra happy about bris mila, Rashi says, because we constantly have it with us. And the Maharal says a different vortan, and also the reason why we're so happy about bris mila, he says, because a person is always happy when they get something that they're missing. Now, like this, the Medrash tells us that Hashem tells Avraham Avinu, as long as you have the Orla, as long as you have the Orla attached to your body, you're lacking, you're missing something. Take it away, and then you'll be perfect. I think Rashi brings it on the pasuk. So over here, when a person finds the thing that they're lacking, then they're very happy about it. So the Rebbe talks about someplace another idea why we're so happy by bris mila is, now we know bris mila is the child experiences pain during the bris mila, and in fact there were poskim who said pain is almost an essential part of the bris mila, and therefore they say you shouldn't be giving anesthetic or whatever. So what's the idea? The Rebbe says then when you have a simcha by bris mila, it's an example of a simcha of yistra na'or mitercha choshech, the great light that comes from within the darkness, which we know is all over in Chassidus, is a tremendous thing. So therefore, over here, the fact that we have a mila that involves the baby's pain, but also at the same time, it's making him it begins the process of bringing him in nefesh alakis, and it makes him perfect, as we said, and so forth. So therefore, we have a tremendous simcha by it. So any mitzvah like that that the Jewish people accepted b'simcha, adayin oisin oisin b'simcha, the Jewish people still do it now b'simcha to this very day. B'chol mitzvah shekibla alei miktata, on the other hand, any mitzvah that the Jewish people to begin with when they accepted with argument and quarrel, kegoin arayis. For example, the issur of arayis. And we know that the Jewish people complained about that dichtiv, because you have the pasuk in parshas Ba'aloscha, by Yishma Moshe on Boichel Mishpachosav. The pasuk says Moshe heard the people crying by their families. So the context is over there that they're complaining they want meat, but why are they gathering by families to do that? So it means Al Iske Mishpachosav. It means that they're not only complaining about the meat, they're also complaining about their family relations, that now they're not allowed to be married to close relatives anymore. Because before Matan Torah, they were like Bnei Noach. There were only six arayas that are also to them, as we learned recently in Rambam. Now they're Jews, and they have 20 odd arayas also to them. So therefore, so they were complaining. So they were complaining about that. What's the connection? Why, when they're complaining about meat, are they also complaining about arayas? So one idea is that both of those involve taivas of the body. So therefore, when they're thinking of one, when they're thinking about how we miss the meat that we used to have, then or that they also start thinking about other taivas that they're missing, including arayas. So that kind of thing, adayin oisin oisibaktata. So such mitzvahs, they still do with argument to this very day, and we know that deleka ksuba delei rama batigra, because you never have a ksuba where there isn't some argument. And inevitably, when two people are getting married and you're planning a wedding and you plan you're writing out the ksuba and whatever, there's always some argument about the details of it. A short story involving, I think, Chosim Lublin, where one time he was invited to a bris and he took an extra long time down, not a bris, a wedding, sorry, and he took an extra, he was supposed to be Masada Kedushin, and he took a very, very long time davening Mincha, and then of course they had to delay the chuppah until he was finished. And afterwards he explained, since our Gemara says that why is our Gemara saying that there's no, that in any ksuba there's always some arguing or something, is because it's decided min hashamayim, not only who's going to marry who, but what exact time they're going to get married. And usually, you know, people of course don't know what that time is, so they just set the wedding, they just set the chuppah for whatever time is convenient, but it's not always the exact time min hashamayim. So then there ends up having to be some kind of argument or something in order to fill in the extra time. So I wanted to avoid that. Instead of that, the time should be filled up with an argument, better it should be filled up with me davening mincha. But we see this concept of that as an argument. Either one of the Rishonim in Mahari Bruna brings, in fact, this is one of the reasons why the Chasan and Kala fast on the day of their wedding, is that this way, if there's any puranus that's supposed to happen like this, and this kind of argument or fighting or whatever, then the fast should be a kapara for it. Anyway, so that's what it is. So any mitzvah that they originally, so any mitzvah that they originally accepted happily, like Miller, they still do happily now. And any mitzvah that they accepted with argument, like marriage, then they still do with arguments and quarrels nowadays. The Vilna Gaon actually has an interesting vote on this. He says, what's the adayin? Why do we need to point out that even now they do it? He says, because bris milah on the eighth day, the Gemara tells us in Nidah, one reason why did Hashem say that the bris milah should be dafka on the eighth day, no earlier and no later, is because the woman is tamei after birth for 7 days, after she gives birth to a boy. You don't want that everybody else is happy by the bris milah and the parents are sad because they can't be together. So therefore, Hashem delayed the milah until the eighth day. That way, the woman can be tahor. But nowadays, we don't do that anyway. Nowadays, a woman doesn't go to the mikveh 7 days after the birth. Between all the various dinim that we learned about in Nidah, about you have the extra days that she has to count before she starts counting the 7 clean days. And practically speaking, a woman bleeds long beyond the 7 days. And nowadays, we don't do dam toyar, etc. So practically speaking, you don't have on the eighth day the husband and wife are able to be together again. Nevertheless, we still do the mitzvah on the eighth day besimcha. And as far as Arayas, the other way around, this that we're saying, that they were complaining about they can't marry their close relatives, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin and in Yuma that the Anshe Knesset Gadola took away the Yetzirah that people have for relations with their close relatives. So nowadays, we don't have that complaint anyway. And still, when it comes to marriages, we still do them with complaints and arguments. Okay. Continues the Gemara, Tanya, Reb Shimon Elazar, here's another way of looking, here's another rule. Kol mitzvah shemosri Yisrael atzma leim l'misa b'shas gzeres ha-malchus, any mitzvah that Jews went on mesiris nefesh when there was a gzera against it, kegoyin avodis kachavim, for example, avodah zara and mila, adayin hi mochzekes biyadam, such mitzvahs are still kept very strongly by the Jewish people to this day. B'chol mitzvah shaloi mosri Yisrael atzma leim l'misa b'shas gzeres ha-malchus, any mitzvah that Jews were not mosir nefesh on it to go to their death, in a time of Gzeres HaMalchus, could go in tefillin, for example, the mitzvah of tefillin, adayin hi merupa biyadam, is still weak in the Jewish people's hands, meaning they keep the mitzvah, but they're not so careful with the details about it. What does that mean? De'omer Rabbi Yanai, tefillin tzrichin guf noki ke'elish abal knafayim. Rabbi Yanai says that when you're wearing tefillin, you have to have a clean body like Elisha Baal Knafayim, as the story that we're going to tell now. We had it earlier in the Masechta as well. So the point is, in other words, Rashi says that we see that we're going to see in the story now that only Elisha was Moshe Nefesh for tefillin. Most people were not. So therefore, to this very day, you have people are weak in tefillin, namely that they're not always careful about this din, about that you have to have a guf naki when you're wearing tefillin. or other Rishonim says more generally, say even more generally, it means people are not always as careful with the mitzvah of tefillin as they should be. When we learned this previously, 80 blot ago, we talked about that, for example, nowadays, of course, we have mitzvah tefillin that the Rebbe started back in, back 700 odd years ago, the Smag, Moshe Mikutzi, who wrote the Sefer Mitzvahs Gadol, the Smag, went on a campaign around Spain and France on a mitzvah tefillin in that time, and then in the 1200s, to urge people to put on tefillin, because given this dinner, they need gufnaki, and then you can't have asardas and so forth, people had gotten careless with the mitzvah of tefillin, and Rav Moshe, the Smag, went around explaining and darshaning to people and explaining to them the importance of the mitzvah and that you have to wear tefillin. So we see, in other words, that it's weak by Jews, and you have to have that kind of encouragement because they weren't moser nefesh on it in its time. Maihi, what do we mean that you have to have a gufnaki? Amar Abaye shalo yafiach behem. Rav Abaye says it means you're not allowed to pass gas while you're wearing tefillin. Rav Amar shalo yishan behem. Rav says it means you can't sleep in them, because when you sleep, you might be prone to pass gas. In other words, Rava is saying that we're not so worried about when you awake that you shouldn't pass gas. That you can control, but you have to make sure not to fall asleep, because then you might involuntarily do that. Okay. Vamai Korolei Elisha Baal Knafayim, this person, why do they call, who was exceptionally careful in the mitzvah of tefillin, why is he called Elisha Baal Knafayim? Shapam Achas Gozra Machos Erosho Gzeira Yisrael, one time the wicked government, the Romans, made a Gzeira on the Jewish people. Shakol Maniach Tefillin Al Rosho Yikru Es Moichei, anybody who puts tefillin on his head, they will knock out his brains. Yikru actually means, it translates it by a word, that means they'll scoop out his brains from his head. They'll poke into his head, they'll drill into his head and remove his brains, basically. But Elisha was still putting on tefillin and going out into the marketplace, because as we're saying, he was extra careful with the mitzvah of tefillin. So one time when he was out in the street, a caster, a Roman official, saw him. So Elisha started running away from him. The caster started running after him. When the caster reached close to Elisha, he took off his tefillin from his head and held them in his hand. So the caster asks him, what do you have in your hand? He says, I have dove's feathers. He opened up his hands and a nes happened, and the tefillin had changed b'derech nes into dove's feathers. Therefore, they called Elisha from then on Baal Knafayim, the master of the feathers or the master of the wings, to represent this nest that happened to him. In fact, Maharsha says he was zoicha to this nest because, as we're saying in the Gemara over here, you have to be careful not to pass gas and not to fall asleep in tefillin. He was extra careful with that, which is why the nest happened to him. And we see, therefore, that therefore he's called Baal Knafayim in the sense that also it had a secondary sense in the sense that he's a little bit like a malach who has wings. He's like a malach when he wears his tefillin. So what do we see from this story? So Tosfos actually says over here, you see that even Elisha is not fully moser nefesh for tefillin, because he did wear them. But then we're seeing when the caster asked him what's going on, he took them off. And he pretended that he wasn't wearing tefillin in the first place. So even Elisha Baal Knafayim, who's going in the street wearing tefillin where nobody else did, is still not at the point of saying I'm going to be moser nefesh for tefillin. So you see, therefore, Tosfos says that even that Jews are not we're not moser nefesh for tefillin, and therefore the mitzvah is still weak by them. There's many, many other different explanations, including that fine, Elisha himself was moser nefesh, but the rest of the Jewish people were not, because we say we're singling out only Elisha did it. And again, according to Rashi, the fact that we're saying Jewish people are not careful just means that they're not always careful to not pass gas or fall asleep in tefillin. According to the other Rishonim, it means they're not always careful b'chlal to wear tefillin. There is a bit of discussion among the Rishonim about the question. Don't we say b'shas hashmad you have to be moser nefesh for all mitzvahs? So we talked about this previously when we had this gemara on daf mem tes. So there's a few different possibilities. Tosfos over there mentions that maybe this that we say that you have to be moser nefesh for any mitzvah is we're talking about a mitzvah where if you're not doing it, then it's obvious that you're not doing it. But over here, tefillin, people don't wear tefillin all day anyway. So therefore, if you're not wearing tefillin at any given time, it doesn't demonstrate that you're being over on the mitzvah and listening to the government. Other Rishonim say a little bit differently, that the concept of you have to be moser nefesh for any mitzvah only applies to a kumva seif. The goyim are telling you, for example, go and do something against Torah, then you're not allowed to do that. But if they're telling you a shev val taseh, if they're telling you don't do such and such a mitzvah, not necessarily are you obligated to be moser nefesh on it. And then there's another explanation also. Some Rishonim say, yes, you do have to be moser nefesh for every mitzvah, but after all, what would happen if they did, or if a person was wearing tefillin and they arrested him, then he's going to be in jail, he's not going to be able to wear tefillin anyway. So therefore, there's nothing to be gained, really, according to that, by being moser nefesh to wear tefillin, because then you're just putting yourself in a situation where you're going to end up not being able to wear tefillin regardless. Okay. The Gemara asks, Maishno kanfe yoyna do amalei. Why, when Elisha Baal Knafayim, when he's telling the Roman official, he asked him, what are you holding in your hand? And he says, I'm holding dove's wings or dove's feathers. Why did he dafka pick that? Obviously, he had to say something, but why did he dafka pick dove's feathers out of all things? The reason, if he has to say feathers, why didn't he say feathers of any other bird? The reason is, Mishum de dam yekneses Yisrael leyoyna, because the Jewish people are compared to a dove. Shenema kanfe yoyna nechba b'kesef, as the pasuk says, the wings of the dove are covered with silver. This is in a kapitel tilim. This is in kapitel samaches, which talks about matan Torah and yitzias Mitzrayim and various other things. So the wings of the dove covered with silver for every seha, and her long feathers are covered b'irakra charutz with green it with yellowish gold. Meaning, so what's the comparison? Ma yona zu kanfer maginus alel, just like with a dove, its wings protect it. Meaning Rashi says when a dove, most birds, when they fight with enemies, they usually try to peck them with their beaks. A dove doesn't do that. Instead, it tries to beat them with its feathers, with its wings. So just like a dove's wings protect it, after Yisrael mitzvahs maginus alel, the same way mitzvahs protect the Jewish people, and therefore the mitzvahs are compared to the wings and the feathers of a dove. Tosfos over there explains a different explanation, that the wings of the dove protect it in the sense that it always flies with at least one wing. Most birds, when they're tired, they just rest and perch for a while. A dove will keep on flying with one wing, if necessary, while it rests its other wing. We talked over there also about Andaf Mem Tes. We said an interesting thing that the Radak says on it, when we say that a dove's wings and feathers protect it, in the sense that a dove is one of those birds that's more valuable alive than dead. You could shecht it and eat it, but on the other hand, it's more valuable alive because you can use it as a homing pigeon, as in fact we find, for example, by Noach, where he used a pigeon to tell us to tell him to go out and see whether the water had drained away from the marble and whether it's safe to go out. So the point is that therefore the mitzvahs are compared to the wings of a dove, and that's why Elisha used that metaphor when he was talking to the Roman. Getting back now, getting back to matters of halacha, we have to continue dealing with this matter of bringing the knife for the milah on Shabbos. Again, Rabbi Eliezer had said that you're allowed to, and Rabbi Akiva says you're not allowed to. So one time it happened, they forgot and they didn't bring the knife for the milah before Shabbos. Ismail, by the way, means it doesn't mean a regular knife. The word for a regular knife would be sakin. An ismail means more like in modern terms it would be a scalpel, the specific knife that's used for a milah, a small knife. Anyway, so one time they forgot and brought it and didn't bring it before Shabbos for a bris milah that had to take place on Shabbos. They brought it on Shabbos through roofs and through chatzeres, shaloi b'tzayin Rabbi Eliezer, not with the consent of Rabbi Eliezer. Now, what we mean is, in other words, they had not made an eruv between these various houses and chatzeres. So there's an issur d'rabbanon to carry things from one place to another, and they brought the knife against Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. What do you mean? Mask of the Rabbi Yezer? What do you mean against Rabbi Yezer's opinion? Shaloi b'tzayin Rabbi Yezer? What do you mean against Rabbi Yezer's opinion? Adarav, Rabbi Yezer hu d'shari. Rabbi Yezer is the one who says you can bring the knife, even in Rosh Hashanah. In fact, you notice at the bottom of the previous Amud, the words Derech Gagas for Derech Chatzeres are in square brackets because maybe they're not necessarily supposed to be there in the first place. There's different Girsois over here. Does the Gemara at first assume that it meant they brought the knife through the Shasarabim, and then the Gemara later on is going to explain that they brought it through Gagas and Chatzeres, or does the Gemara know that in the first place? So if we say the Gemara didn't know that in the first place, it thought that they brought it through the Shasarabim, then the question is very strong. Then what do you mean, Rabbi Yazar says you should bring it through the Shasarabim. And if you say that the Gemara knows that you brought it Derech Gagas and Chatzeres, then the question still is, if you're allowed to bring it even in Shasarabim, which Rabbi Yazar allows that, even though that's an Issur Deraisa, for sure you should be allowed to bring it through Chatzeres, through roofs and Chatzeres, which is only an Issur Derabanan. So Adrabba, Rabbi Eliezer, who deshori, on the contrary, Rabbi Eliezer is the one who says it's mutter. V'chitema, so you're going to say maybe what the b'raisa means is shaloi b'tzen Rabbi Eliezer deshori afilu b'rishas rabim. You're going to say that maybe it means that it wasn't according to Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Eliezer would actually allow you, would have said that you should bring it even through rishas rabim. Ela b'tzen rabbanon, so you would say it means that, so who did they follow when they're doing it? They have to be following somebody. So if they're not following Rabbi Yezer because they didn't bring it through Rosh Hashanah, then maybe they're following the rabbanon. Ela b'tzen rabbanon to osru derech Rosh Hashanah, but you would say maybe the rabbanon don't allow you to bring it through Rosh Hashanah because that would be an issur deraisa. But the shoru derech gagas derech chatzeres for kapefes, maybe they would allow you to do it where it's only an issur derabbanon to bring it by way of roofs or chatzeres or kapefes. A kapef is an enclosed area, so you have a there's different kinds of enclosed areas. It actually explains if the Karpif is less than base sasayim, less than 5,000 square amos, then it has the din like a regular chotzer, and as long as they made an eruv, then you're allowed to carry in it. If it's base sasayim, 5,000 square amos or more, then it depends whether it was hokaf ladira, then it depends whether it was enclosed by a wall or a fence or whatever for the purpose of being used as living area, like a chotzer. You don't actually live in there because you sleep in the house, but you use a chotzer on an ongoing basis for your daily activities. So therefore, if it was hokaf ladira, then fine, but if not, then the maximum you can carry is only if it's up to base sasayim, more than that not. But you could still have, let's say, for example, you actually said, so let's say, for example, you have one karpif next to the other. Suppose you have something that's 2 amos away from the fence of one, and you're going to carry it 2 amos until the fence, and then 2 amos in the other one. So normally you're not allowed to do that either. So we would say maybe that's what it means. Maybe it means that they brought the knife, in this case, by way of the roofs and the chatzeres and whatever. And we're saying Rabbi Eliezer would not like that, because Rabbi Eliezer would say, why are you doing that? Just bring it through to Shasarabim straight and get, and as we said before, as we said, Tosfos has said before, this way you're doing the mitzvah, this way you're able to do the mitzvah quickly. So we're saying maybe the Chachamim would say, fine, we're not going to allow you to bring it by way of Rosh Hashanabim, because then it's an Issur Daraisa, but we will allow you to bring it by way of the Gagas, of the roofs and the Chatzeres and the Karpefes. But how could that be? Umi Shori, do the Chachamim actually allow that? The same Chachamim who ask you to bring it through Rosh Hashanabim would also ask you to bring it through Gagas and Chatzeres and so forth. V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, k'shem she'en mevi'en oisei derech Rosh Hashanabim, just like you can't bring the knife through Rosh Hashanabim on Shabbos, according to Rabbi Akiva, which the halacha is like him, kach ein mevi'en oisei derech loy derech Gagas, v'loy derech Karpefes, v'loy derech Chatzeres, the same way you can't bring it by way of the roof, so the Karpefes or the Chatzeres. So, what do we mean over here when we say that they brought the knife through the roofs and the chatzeres? Shaloi b'tzon Rabbi Eliezer. Well, then who was it according to? Rabbi Eliezer. It's not only not according to Rabbi Eliezer. It's not according to the Chachamim either. Ela Amar Ravashi. So Ravashi says, right. What it means is, Ravashi says, Shaloi b'tzon Rabbi Eliezer umachluktei. It means you should know that when they did this, it wasn't according to Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Eliezer would say, don't bring it through the roofs and the chatzeres and whatnot, and also not according to the Chachamim who disagree with him, who, as we just said, say it's also to do it through the chatzeres and the karpefes as well. Ela b'tzayin Reb Shimon. Rather, who did they follow when they did this? They followed the opinion of Reb Shimon in doing that. Now, Reb Shimon is not directly addressing this machloikas about machshire mila and whatnot. Reb Shimon, Reb Shimon, in terms of machshire mila, in terms of the actual din of what you're allowed to do, on Shabbos and what you of bringing the mila knife and so forth, Reb Shimon agrees with Reb Akiva and the rest of the chachamim that any machshirin that could have been done before Shabbos have to be done before Shabbos, and if not, then you're not allowed to do them. But Reb Shimon holds bichlal when it comes to carrying on Shabbos that there's a certain heter regarding roofs and chatzeres and so forth. Namely, you have like this. We know that you have to make an Eruv Chatzeres. Between one Chatzer and another, you have to make an Eruv Chatzeres, and if not, then you're not allowed to carry it from one Chatzer into another. We know that. Everybody agrees to that. The question is, what if you have... So what about, for example, the roofs in the city? Are you allowed to carry something from one roof to another? Let's say you had a keli that was on the roof before Shabbos. Now, during Shabbos, you want to transfer it to another roof or to another chotzer or whatever. So, the Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Eruvin. Now, there's actually a three-way machlokas about it. Reb Meir holds you're allowed to carry from one roof to another, but not, for example, from a roof to a chotzer. So even if they didn't make an Eruv, even if the people, so you have one person in one house, the other person next door, they didn't make an Eruv between them, nevertheless, Rameo would say you're allowed to move things from one roof to another. If the Keli was on the roof before Shabbos, you're allowed to move it to the other roof. Similarly, you'd be allowed to move things from one chotzer to another, even without an Eruv, but not between the roofs and the chatzeres. But not between the roofs and the chatzeres, let's say. That's Reb Meir. The roofs and the chatzeres are considered one rishus, and the karpefes are considered a separate rishus. So according to the chachamim, you could transfer between the roofs and the chatzeres. If you have something that was in the chatzer or on the roof before Shabbos, then you would be allowed to move it to the other one on Shabbos. But again, this all applies only if the things were on the roof or in the chotzer or whatever before Shabbos. Not if it was in the house. If it was inside the house, definitely everybody agrees you can only carry it out to the chotzer or to the other chotzer, only if you made an Eruv Chatzeres before Shabbos. So, and then you have the third opinion of Reb Shimon, which says that everything outside the houses is considered one rishus. So all the roofs, all the chatzeres, all the karpefes, all of them, you're allowed to carry freely between one and another, even if you did not make an Eruv, as long as the keli was in those places, but was in one of those places before Shabbos. So when we're saying over here that they brought the knife on Shabbos by way of the roofs and the karpefes, by the way of the roofs and the chatzeres, that is according to Reb Shimon. The Tanan, as we learn in a Mishnah in Eruvin, Reb Shimon Amar, Echad Gagas v'Echad Karpefes v'Echad Chatzeres, whether it comes to the roofs or the Karpefes, these large enclosed areas that are not Chatzeres, v'Echad Chatzeres, or the Chatzeres themselves, Kulan Rishus Echad Hein L'Kelim Sheshav Sebeseichon, all of them are considered one Rishus as far as the Kelim that started Shabbos in them, so you would be allowed to move a Keli from one to the other of them, even though no Eruv Chatzeres was made. The loyal kelim sheshav sumaseich habayis, but not for kelim that started out Shabbos in the house. Those you are not allowed to bring out from the house into the chotzer and into another chotzer, etc., unless you made an eruv. So when we're saying they brought this knife through the roofs and the chatzeres, that would be according to Reb Shimon. Actually, Tosfos points out the Gemara could have said it's also according to Reb Meir, but the fact is Tosfos says the halacha is like Reb Shimon. Therefore, the Gemara wanted to explain that this story they actually did like Reb Shimon. Fine. But so now let's talk more generally about this question of where you're allowed to carry on Shabbos. And the reason we're going to mention it is because later on we're going to relate this to this question about carrying a knife for a meal on Shabbos. Bominir Abzeda Mirabasi. So Abzeda asked Rabasi as follows. Mavui shalai nishtat fubai, a mavui that they did not make a shittufi. Now, we have to realize, we have to remember, besides that you have to make an eruv chatzeres, you also have to make a shittuf mavoyas. You also have to, so you make an eruv chatzeres, you have to, you gather food from all the people whose houses open out into the chatzer, or nowadays we just use a box of matzah for the purpose, whatever, and we make the eruv chatzeres. You have a similar thing for the mavui, the side street that those chatzeres open out into, you have to have a shittuf mavoyas, again, that everybody from all the chatzeres pulls some food together, and we put it in one of the chatzeres, and it makes it now as if all the chatzeres and the mavui was all one rishus yachid. Plus the mavui, because it's open at one end to rishus rabim, you also need, as we've learned earlier in the masechta, as we're going to learn, bez Hashem in eruvin, you need also a lechi or a kora. You need a vertical pole at the entrance to the mavui, or you need a horizontal beam going across the entrance. Anyway, so in this case, you have a mavui. They didn't make a shittuf. They didn't make a shittuf for it. They did put up a lechi or a kora, but they didn't make the shittuf. They didn't gather the food and make the shittuf mavoyas. Ma'u l'talta b'kulay. Would you be allowed to carry in that whole mavoy anyway? If you have something that started out in the mavoy before Shabbos, let's say. Would we say in that sense the mavui is like the chotzer? Ma chotzer afagabla irvu mutal taltabakulai. And we're saying that with the chotzer, even if you didn't make an eruv chatzeris, if you had a keli that started out in the chotzer, then you're allowed to move it anywhere in the chotzer on Shabbos. We said all three opinions allow that. Hi Nami, so the same thing with the Mavri. Afagabdala Nishtat Fubai, even if they didn't make the Shittuf Mutal Talta Bakule, maybe you should be allowed to carry throughout the whole thing. Oy Duma Loy Domi Lachatzer. Or maybe we would say that a Mavri is not like a Chatzer. The Chatzer Isle Dalin Machitzis. A Chatzer at least has four full Machitzis. Hi, Lesle Dalin Machitzis, as opposed to a Mavri only has three full Machitzis, and then it's got the Lechi or the Koda at the fourth end. So maybe that's not enough to be considered like a Chatzer. Maybe it really does need a shittuf mavoyas to even carry in it at all. Again, to carry from the houses or from the chatzeres into the mavoy, no question you need a shittuf mavoyas. That's the purpose of the shittuf mavoyas. The question is, if you had a keli that was in the mavoy at the beginning of Shabbos, if you didn't make the shittuf, would you be allowed to move it to a different place in the mavoy? Okay, inami, or another question, another reason you could say a difference maybe to distinguish between a chotzer and a mavui. Chotzer isle diurin, because a chotzer you have people use it regularly for living space. They use it as an extension of their house. Hi, lesle diurin, as opposed to the mavui is not used as a living space. The mavui is just a street. There's just a side street to get in and out of it to the house, to the main street, to the rishus rabim. So that was the question. So Rav Asi was quiet and he didn't answer anything. He didn't know the answer, Rav Ashas. Zimnin, another time, Ashkeche, Rav Zera, another time, found Rav Asi, the Yosef Kama. He was sitting and saying as follows, Amr Rav Shim ben Lokesh Meshum Rav Yehuda HaNasi, Pam Achas Shochu V'Lehiviyu Izmel Ma'erev Shabbos. One time for a bris milah on Shabbos, it happened that they forgot to bring the knife before Shabbos. V'Aviyuhu B'Shabbos, they brought it on Shabbos. The Chachamim found that difficult to understand. How could you do that? How could you set aside the words of the Chachamim and follow Rabbi Eliezer? Fine, we said on Omer Aleph, there was the place where Rabbi Eliezer himself was the Rav, and there they were entitled to follow his opinion, but fine, this wasn't such a place, or this may have been Bechlal after they passed in, not like Rabbi Eliezer, so how are they able to follow his opinion? Number one, Rabbi Eliezer is Shamusi, which means Rashi says they put him in Nidui in the famous story of Tanu Shalachnoi. Then Rashi brings a second explanation from the Yerushalmi that Shamusi means that Rabbi Eliezer was a Talmud of Beis Shammai. And we know in general that Halacha is not like Beis Shammai. Tosfos, in fact, proves from a Yerushalmi that's the main meaning of the word Shamusi. So it means a Talmud of Beis Shammai. Anyway, so obviously then, for either of those reasons, you can't pass in like Rabbi Eliezer. But oid, and anyway, even if it weren't for that, yochid v'rabim alocha k'rabim. When we have a machlokas of the yochid Rabbi Eliezer against the rabim, the chachamim, the halacha is like the chachamim. So how can you be bringing a knife on Shabbos for bris milah? V'amr Rabbi Oshia, so Rabbi Oshia says, she'ilis es Rabbi Yehuda ha-goizer, I asked Rabbi Yehuda the moihil. Goizer means the one who cuts, so it means the ones who did, it means the moihil. So what exactly happened? How are they bringing a knife how they bring a knife on Shabbos when Rabbi Eliezer, when only Rabbi Eliezer says that's allowed, and the Chacham disagree. But Amali, and he answered me, Mavoi shlo nishtat for boy hava. The situation was, it was a Mavoi that they didn't make a shittuf in it. So they brought it from one end of the Mavoi to the other. Meaning, Bapashtus, what we mean is that, so Rashi explains that the baby was in a house at one end of the Mavoi, the knife was in the house at the other end of the Mavoi, and they carried it through the Mavoi, and they carried it through the Mavoi on Shabbos. But the Mavoi, they had not made a shit of Mavois, and yet they carried it. In fact, Baruch Shah talks about over here the question of, does that imply, in other words, that the Chachamim would agree, that the Chachamim would agree that even though we're saying you can't usually be over on Isurim Daraiso or even Drabbanon in order to do a Bris Milah on Shabbos, maybe in this case where we're talking about you're only missing the Shittuf Mavayis, then you would actually be allowed to carry out the knife from the house, even though normally to carry from the house through the Mavri would usually be Osir, because you need the Shittuf, for sure you need the Shittuf Mavayis for that. So Marashot talks about at some length over here that maybe in this case the Chacham would actually allow it over here, because after all, it is for the mitzvah of Bris Milah. So that's one way. Or the other way of understanding would be that maybe the baby itself was in the Mavoi and the knife was at the other end of the Mavoi, and then so there's no carrying from the houses at all. It's strictly carrying in the Mavoi. Okay. Anyway. So they brought it from one end of the Mavoi to the other, even though there was no shittur. Amale, so now when Reb Zera hears Reb Asi saying that, he says, Svirle Lamar, Mavri Shalin Shtat for Mutal Talta Bakulai. So does that mean that you hold that a Mavri that they didn't make a Shittuf, you would in fact be allowed to carry through the whole thing? But Amale Ain, and Reb Asi says yes. So Reb Zera says, Amale, Vahazimnin Ba'oi Minach. What happened the last time when I asked you this question? Valoi Amrit Lihachi. You didn't tell me that, or you didn't tell me anything at all. Why not? Dilma agav shitfach rohit loch gemarach. Is it possible that maybe as you're saying quickly over this statement of Rish Lakish, then you remembered this particular detail? You remembered along with it what Rav Oshi had said about that it was a mavri shel nishtat v'moy, and now you remember, whereas previously you had forgotten. Amalei, so he says, "Ein yes, agav shitfach rohit loch gemarach." That is exactly what happened. As I was busy saying the statement of Rish Lakish about the story where they brought this knife and the Chachamim were wondering how it's possible. Then with that, I remembered what Rav Oshia said. And now I remember that, yes, a Mavri Shlo Nishtat for boy, you are in fact allowed to carry in it. You're allowed to carry in it if the Keli was at one end of the Mavri and you're carrying it to the other end. And maybe even for Mila, maybe even according to what Marshall is saying and according to what Rashi is saying, maybe even for Mila, you would actually be allowed to carry it from a house at one end of the Mavri through the Mavri to a house at the other end, even though normally you would be also to do that on Shabbos. Again, we're talking about that nothing is set aside for Shabbos except for the Mila itself, and it would mean that the knife itself was carried from one end of the Mavri to the other, and it would mean more generally you're allowed to carry something from one end of the Mavri to the other, even if there's no shittuf. Okay. So we'll stop over here, Bez Hashem, and we'll continue tomorrow with another opinion on the subject, and then we're going to eventually get back to the dinim of Mila itself.
Shakayach, have a wonderful day.
Everyone, thank you.
Safe travel. Cheers.